Hi, I'm Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. Today is Saturday, August 25th, 2012, and this is the third episode of the podcast. You can find the show at theastrologypodcast.com, and you can also subscribe to us through iTunes. My co-host today is Nick Dagan Best, and our topic is the definition of the term astrologer. During the course of the show, we talk a little bit about what the word astrologer means and whether it should simply be used as a professional designation or whether the term can be applied more broadly to a looser class of people. So this leads us to a discussion of different issues such as professional certification, whether astrology involves any sort of belief, and different things like what a person should know in order to consider themselves to be an astrologer. So with that, let's get started. Hi, Nick. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining me for my third episode. So we're going to cover a few things today, but I think we'll jump right into our first topic, which is recently I was working on an entry on my new website on the Astrology Dictionary, and I was trying to define the term astrologer. So I actually wanted to have a discussion with you about how you define the term astrologer, because I realized that it's actually potentially kind of controversial, and different people perhaps define astrologer in different ways. So it raised some issues like, what does it take to be considered an astrologer? Or is the term astrologer as a designation restricted to only professional astrologers? What do you feel about that? Do you think that, do you typically, when you hear the term astrologer, does that immediately invoke, or do you restrict it to a professional practicing astrologer who accepts money for their services?
That's a good question. I think at certain points I have thought the definition centered around something pertaining to whether or not the person was professional. I'm not sure if I still agree, because there is there are a lot of people who are fully engaged in astrology and have been for years, but don't do it for a living. And I think part of what I wrestle with is the main way to earn a living as an astrologer is to give consultations.
Sure.
And the further along I go, I guess part of me has always felt this way, but the further I go as an astrologer, the less I feel being an astrologer is really defined by that, by the fact that someone gives consultations. I think defining an astrologer as someone who gives consultations, it to me is like defining a musician as someone who performs concerts.
Sure, right.
You know, not all musicians perform concerts. Some just do it at home or with their friends. Are they not musicians? No, I'd say they're still musicians. They might not be professional musicians if they're not sort of charging admission and people are coming, you know, paying to see them play. And that sometimes is an indicator of the quality of the musician, and sometimes it's not. There are a lot of fantastic musicians who don't make any money. So I think it's that sort of that parallel with that in mind. I've been a professional astrologer for over a decade now, and for me that has almost always meant earning my living giving consultations, except for various times when I got jobs writing or things like that. But at the same time, I've given consultations. It's something I enjoy, but it's something I do to sort of, if you will, support my own astrology habit. You know, the reason I'm worth the fee I charge for a reading is because I'm someone who is daily engaged and immersed in the study of astrology and the observation of ongoing astrological phenomena and discoveries. And that's in my mind, the reason my fee is worth anything to anyone in the first place. It's not because I'm a professional astrologer, but rather I'm a professional astrologer because I am first and foremost simply an astrologer, simply someone who is fully engaged in pursuing this knowledge and trying to get as much as I can out of it. And I'm just sort of naturally driven in that way.
Okay. That's a good point.
Yeah, I think it's less. I mean, I think if you'd asked me 10 years ago, I think I probably would have said, yeah, an astrologer is a professional. An astrologist is just someone who's an enthusiast without charging a fee. And I'm not sure if I still believe that definition. But it's an interesting question.
Yeah, you raised an important point, which is that it's not the actual practicing of astrology that defines you, or at least the doing of consultations that defines you as an astrologer necessarily, but that's just a means to an end because that's what you do all of the time and that's what you'd like to focus on, or that's the particular type of expertise that you've developed in a specific field, and therefore as a side almost benefit or result of that, that's why you are able to do astrological consultations professionally.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And that's important because somebody tried to raise the counterpoint. They tried to use an analogy. I think it was Emma Current on Facebook tried to raise the counterpoint that a psychologist or a doctor or dentist or what have you, they are specific professions that are defined within those fields, and they have standards and certification that define them. And that's, and you don't call somebody like a dentist or a psychologist unless they are trained and certified in their field to be representative of that profession. And she tried to say that it's the same with astrologers.
Right. I mean, it's a good point. I think, to my mind, it plays to some degree to this ongoing and, while understandable, I'd say a little unnecessary inferiority complex on the part of the astrology community, generally speaking. This sort of longing to be seen alongside the sort of the most respectable professions, because, you know, the reality is we're not really ranked very highly in the day-to-day world in terms of respectable professions. I think, you know, I mean, not that these are necessarily informed opinions, but reasonably widespread opinions that, you know, we're basically a step up from prostitutes or people who shine shoes or whatever other jobs people tend to look down on. So
there's some prostitutes right now. They're finding that remark offensive.
Yeah. Well, my apology to the girls and boys, you know, peace to all and what have you. I'm simply stating the fact that these opinions are out there, as opposed to sort of laying down any kind of glove.
No, I think societally that's probably a good point. It's something like doctor, you know, firefighter, policeman, teacher, prostitute, yeah. Astrologer yeah. is somewhere on the lower rank of that.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, frankly, I mean, my passion for astrology, and I think this is true for anyone who's made the choice to pursue it as far as we have, and there's certainly a lot of us out there. We've obviously shrugged off at least we've made some gestures of shrugging off. The aspersions that would be cast our way by either people we don't know or even sometimes people we do know. I suppose we all want respect and that's understandable. But I really feel that unfortunately this is our burden to carry. I don't apologize for being an astrologer, and I'm not terribly worried about whether or not someone sees me alongside, you know, some of those other professions. I think the definition, I guess what's really bugging me is that we're really defining astrologer by definition of consultations. And the further I go, I just feel, well, that's just not true. So much of doing astrology has zero to do with doing consultations. And I'm not sure, you know, I never really sort of think about anyone other's practice but my own. But I tend to think that if you're only a consulting astrologer and not engaged in it in some other fashion, that is sort of like doing karaoke as opposed to, you know, really getting up and singing with a band. But maybe these are simply, you know, my own narrow values and don't really apply to the question.
No, I mean, I think anyone who's been in the astrological community for a little while realizes that there's a lot of people within that community who self-identify as astrologers, who think of themselves as astrologers, but don't necessarily even practice the subject full-time professionally. That's not their primary source of income or what have you. And so it does raise this question of, you know, are those people still astrologers if they don't consult professionally full-time or even part-time for that matter? And I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, I think so. And let's go back to the doctor analogy. Maybe we can look at it another way. What about the doctor who's you know, done the education, done the full, you know, they're a certified doctor, but they don't work professionally. Immediately upon getting their diploma, they run down to Central America, live in a hut, and live as sort of, you know, little community doctors who maybe get paid in produce and, you know, survive very nicely and do a lot of good. But I mean, they're barely professional in the definition that you offered earlier. Is it really the dollar amount that you're getting that decides it? Is it not sort of simply reaching some level of proficiency with the craft? I mean, I guess that, you know, this always brings us back to the question of certification, and maybe that really is, you know,
right.
I could imagine someday in the future that we will arrive at that, you know, if we do sort of over time improve our standing in society, as it were. And eventually there is a central astrology or a national astrology bureau that offers, you know, a formalized exam, and you're not really called an astrologer until you've passed that exam. In the same way that, you know, in many states you have to have a license to cut hair, and certainly we all need licenses to drive vehicles. So it's not necessarily the big sort of I guess some people sometimes think of these exams and these certifications as being the word escapes me. But anyway, the not to digress. The point being, I guess, that you know, the problem with defining an astrologer by virtue of the consultations is it almost starts to put a dollar value on the definition.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think your digression about certification was a digression, because I think that's the primary potential problem with the doctor or lawyer analogy, is that within the astrological community, we don't have any kind of real standard certification process. Basically, somebody becomes a, you know, professional astrologer and starts practicing it whenever they decide to at any point in their studies, when they set themselves up as a professional astrologer and start accepting money for doing interpretations. And that's problematic, because that's obviously not the way it is in other fields, because you do have to have some kind of specific training and certification from a recognized body in those other fields in order to call yourself like a practicing doctor, a physician, or a lawyer, or what have you.
Yeah, or like I said, a hairdresser or a driver of vehicles. You know, in a lot of ways, it's just sort of the way we tend to recognize as a society someone's qualification, if they've sort of met a bare minimum. You know, the thing, I'll just say from my personal experience, this is, I mean, maybe it's just because of the way my life path has unraveled, but I'd say this is also true about you. I got my sort of the certification part of my astrological education really at the beginning, you know, of my by the time I got level one NCGR, I had been studying astrology for 3 years. And then by the time I got the highest level I have, level three, I'd been studying for 4 years. And now it's been 17 years that I've been studying astrology. In other words, my certification in astrology, at least in my case, is not an indicator of how hard I've sort of worked and developed and grown over the years. It's this sort of entry level you know, sort of standard that I passed. That in my view, and this is not a dismissal of it, pursuing those certification exams was a tremendous education in itself. But it really just sort of got me in the front door where I could start to call myself an astrologer because, you know, I had done the trial, if you will. So it's when someone gets a sort of a certification, with, you know, any of the good ones out there, NCGR or ESAR or whatever, you know, it's not that you haven't really arrived, in my view, you haven't arrived at anything except the beginning, you know. But maybe it's different in other people's views. Maybe some people like really work hard for 10 years before they feel they are worthy of taking the exams. I don't really know. But I'd say in your life path, this has generally been true too, that you really, I mean, you did get an education, but it was at the beginning. It wasn't the thing that sort of, you know, it's not like a doctorate. It's an entry level sort of acknowledgement to say, yeah, this person has the sort of the basic knowledge needed to begin becoming an astrologer.
Yeah, I mean, I went to Kepler about 3 or 4 years into my studies, sort of similar to you. And I think it just, the good thing that certification does do, because I don't feel like any of the certification that are out there, at least that are currently out there, like, you know, NCGR, AFA, or ESAR are terribly comprehensive in the same way as if you're like a doctor and you're doing a program like that. But they do set a standard for what you should know, and they let you know what you don't know. If you're still somewhat early on in your studies or you're an intermediate astrologer, it can tell you the things that you should know that you perhaps don't at that point or haven't forced yourself to study. And that, I guess that's what they're useful for, is they set those kind of baseline standards of what every astrologer should know.
Yeah. I would agree fully. I'd say, you know, any listeners out there who for whatever reason haven't taken the exams, certainly if you haven't taken the exams for the reason I suggested a minute ago, that maybe, you know, you don't feel you're worthy or ready or what have you, I'd say throw yourself into it. You know, it's the thing to do sort of early on in your study to you know, get you up to scratch. And indeed, just like you said, Chris, it teaches you the stuff that you don't know but should.
Well, yeah, I should step back for a second, because I don't want to fully endorse them, because I have some major problems with the certifications. Because on the other hand, just because somebody is certified as, you know, an NCGR level whatever astrologer or AFA or ESAR or what have you, that doesn't make them a good astrologer. It doesn't make them terribly knowledgeable about the subject. No.
That's sort of what I was getting at the beginning. That it's an entry level acknowledgement. Right. You know, it's in no way, and again, this isn't a put down. If you have a problem with it, that's fine. But this isn't a put down. I think it's good for what it is. It's this sort of entry level ring of fire that you pass through, just to, you know, make sure you're sort of aware of the sort of the baseline knowledge behind astrology. But yeah, it's elementary, and I you know, I think that's fine for what it is. But it by no means suggests that you're some kind of expert or qualified really to do anything other than, you know, keep working at learning and studying and investigating and thinking and whatever it is that you're doing in pursuing astrology.
Sure. Yeah. So that brings us back to our original issue, which is that even if, you know, certification is not required to become an astrologer. Basically, at some point in a person's studies, they get to the point where they feel like they know enough that they start reading charts for people, and sometimes they start charging for it. And some people slowly make a transition into being a professional or practicing astrologer at that point. But even that's a bit problematic, because nobody ever really knows where to transition. And it's always kind of, it seems like a lot of the more introspective and intelligent and somewhat thoughtful astrologers, sometimes I've noticed there's this phenomenon will they'll take a little bit longer to transition into that point, whereas there's some people who, after just like a few months of study or a year, they'll just like jump right in and start reading people's charts, even if they're not that good.
Right.
And that's one of the drawbacks. That's one of the problems with our lack of standardized certification right now.
Yeah. I mean, it is, the astrology market is a sort of wild west, you know, in terms of the business world.
Sure.
And it doesn't, I mean, I think it's just, it's part and parcel with where astrology is at this point in history, you know. It's largely forgotten knowledge that we're still in the process of resurrecting and rediscovering. And while we've learned a lot about it, you know, over the past, say, century, since people have started to, you know, really in large numbers start to look at it again, you know, we're just not far along enough, I think, as a practice, as a unified practice, to sort of demand that things be sort of centralized. You know, the way, say, there's a, you know, international board of medicine or whatever, that, you know, those level of standards should be there, but we don't know what they are yet. You know, this work is a mystery, you know. There's no getting around that, I think.
Yeah.
And because of that, I, you know, the fact that people can go out there and say, you know, anyone can call themselves an astrologer. Anyone can make a business card. You know, they read a couple of books, or maybe they read one book, and they go out and they start giving readings. I've heard stories like that, you know. I have one story I remember very well of someone who really knew very little and was giving very dodgy sounding astrology readings. These things happen, and we don't have a lot of recourse. Unfortunately, you know, I can't think of a single thing to do to counteract that, that kind of thing, other than to sort of go out and be the best astrologer you could be, you know, to add balance to the other side, to be good, to be professional. There goes that word again after I dismissed it earlier.
No, I mean, it's a,
but really that's it. It is the Wild West. It is the Wild West. It's not fair. There's a dodgy element to it. Trying to address that in a really sort of straightforward or definitive way would probably pose more problems than solve anything. But at the same time, I mean, this is a field that is growing. You know, I get a sense that the quality of astrology out there today is much higher than it was, say, 30 years ago. I do have an optimism, generally speaking, in terms of where everything's going. We may or may not see it in our lifetime, Chris, but that's not really what's fundamentally important. You know, if 50 years from now, 100 years from now, or what have you, astrology has arrived at a level. It becomes a level of knowledge that society equates to, say, medical knowledge or other scientific knowledge or expertise. You know, then certainly it would not be easy for, you know, that kind of charlatanism, or at least, you know, theoretically it shouldn't be as easy. Of course, there are people who still go out and pretend to be doctors, and they don't always catch those people. So maybe it's never perfect.
Sure. Well, I guess just to wrap up this section, this is what I'm still playing with this. I'm still working on this definition of how to define an astrologer, but I ended up trying to come up with three points that I thought that most astrologers I knew fit, and that this would be a broad enough definition to cover both most professional and most amateur astrologers, or at least astrologers who don't charge money for their services. So the first point, these are the three criteria. The first one is that the person, this is what makes a person astrologer. A person is an astrologer if, one, they quote-unquote believe in that astrology is a legitimate phenomenon, that it works. They believe that astrology works. Or conversely, you might phrase that differently and say they've observed that astrology works. Two, that the person has some level of familiarity with the techniques of astrology beyond what most people in society would commonly know about the subject. So this person knows more than just sun signs. They have some basic or more than basic grasp of the subject and the basic components of it, whatever tradition it is that they study. And three, that they use their quote-unquote belief in the validity of the subject, as well as their familiarity with the techniques, to actively incorporate astrology into their life in some way on their own, either on a daily basis or more sporadically. So those are the three points. That's like the broad three pieces of criteria that I thought you could use to define someone as an astrologer versus somebody that's not an astrologer. Because somebody that's not an astrologer, there's at least one of these that they're not going to fit into that category.
Right.
What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's as good a stab to, wrestle this slippery fish as anyone's going to do. Because it is tricky, but I couldn't do any better. Let me say that. So I guess that's an approval in and of itself.
Sure. Okay. Well, maybe we'll settle on that as our tentative definition of astrologer. And if anyone wants to argue with us or provide any counterpoints or other perspectives or opinions, they can post it in the comments section on the website. I guess the last point is, even once you establish that, then you still have a division between what we might call a professional astrologer who practices astrology professionally versus maybe an amateur astrologer, although some people might not like that term.
Actually, that's what's ironic about all this, because our distant cousins, the astronomers, the professionals in that field would be the first to tell you that they wouldn't have gotten very far, certainly over the past couple of decades, without the hordes of amateur astronomers who make actually most of the really big discoveries. The professional astronomers are the ones who have jobs, operating the big telescopes and what have you. But there are loads of qualified but not paid amateur astronomers, qualified if not in certification, at the very least, in knowledge and self-study. And they've made a huge contribution to their field. So they're not deprived of the term astronomer. Even their professional counterparts would not dare, deny them that. It's simply you're either a professional astronomer or an amateur astronomer. An amateur does not mean that you suck at what you do. It means you do it out of love instead of money. I think. Unfortunately, the word amateur just sort of rings badly to some people. Some Sure. people just immediately associate it with a negative connotation, when really there's nothing negative about being an amateur whatsoever. And maybe we ought to take a page from our good old distant cousins, the astronomer, and simply sort of arrive at the definition that way, which is... really sort of perhaps the only really crucial part of the definition that we need to worry about. If you're professional, it's because you charge a fee for consultations. If you're amateur, it's either because you give readings for free, or you're just a mundane astrologer who's strictly engaged in non-consultation type of astrological work, of which there is much, albeit not terribly lucrative.
Right, or it's just not your primary vocation, because
being
an astrologer is not a lucrative position. It's something you do because you're really into astrology and you can't imagine yourself doing anything else. It's not something you really get into usually to try and make a living.
Exactly. Anyone who would get into astrology with the thought that it was lucrative is really misguided. And that's the thing. It can be lucrative. Certainly some people have done very well with it. It has potential in that way. But no matter how far I go as a professional, I always want to be an amateur You know, right. It would be terrible to only be a professional astrologer and not be an amateur one as well. And of course, while the two terms are generally thought to be mutually exclusive, I think you know what I mean. No matter what I do with astrology to, you know, support myself, I certainly always want to be also doing things that I'm just doing because I love them.
Right.
Because that's just, you know, part of the reason I got into it in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the distinctions that I usually see when I have to ask the question, like we have a mutual friend where I always had to ask a question, like, is this person an astrologer or is his primary interest elsewhere? And the ultimate question always came down to for me was, you know, would this person meet somebody new and want to look at their chart? Or does this person just cast charts for events that they've recently heard about or for things just for love of doing it, for love of astrology? That's usually the dividing line for me for most astrologers. And it's not necessarily just wanting to do or actually doing charts professionally, because I do know of some astrologers who still are astrologers, but who've retired from doing like natal consultations, for example. I think Nick Campion, for example, I thought I heard a few years ago that he retired from doing natal consultations. And I don't think that makes him any less of an astrologer. He just doesn't, you know, that's work for him. And he doesn't necessarily like doing it for work.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, in Nick's case, he does derive income related to his astrology work in other venues, as a teacher, as an author, and things like that. So, I mean, there is that, you know, I think that's, you know, even if we were going to go with that sort of definition that we tried to discard early on, that an astrologer is merely someone who does consultations for a living, or who uses astrology to make a living, Nick still winds up, you know, under even that sort of rather narrow and not terribly substantial definition.
Right, sure. Okay, well, the last point on this subject is the dreaded term astrologist, which came up when I was trying to define astrologer, because this term, it kind of gets a bad rap, because astrologist, because there's a discussion about this on Facebook recently, and there are a lot of different opinions, but it seemed like there was a general consensus that astrologers generally don't like to be called astrologists, that the term astrologer is the preferred designation, and therefore sometimes when somebody uses the term astrologist, it's usually one of two people, or people that fall into one of two categories, either outsiders that don't know any better, or people who are just getting into the field and also don't know any better, so that the commonality is that usually it's people who don't realize that the preferred designation is astrologer, and because that's a preferred designation, sometimes astrologers look upon it kind of negatively for some reason.
Right. I mean, the other thing about the word, again, I mentioned the word astrologist earlier because, like I said, years ago, that might have been the term I would have used for anyone who did not earn a living with astrology, but was just sort of an enthusiast.
Sure.
And like I said, I've shed that definition and not entirely sure what to make of astrologist at this point. I think the thing that bugs me about the word is the ist, because where there's an ist, there's an ism.
Right.
And I think that's what sort of taints the term, is the implication that, I mean, if you're an astrologist advocating astrologism, it implies that you're a zealot, or, you know, or what's the word, that an evangelist, an astrological evangelist or something.
Right.
You know, I don't mean to say that that's what the word means, but even just if I'm being honest about my reaction to it, that's what I get out of it. But that also has to do, I think, with my feelings about ism words, generally speaking, and their their application in global society, but that's a whole other matter.
Sure.
You know, astrologism, I think it implies something ideological, And that certainly is nothing, you know, I mean, the only ideology I can think of that I have about astrology is that I guess I feel a responsibility to investigate it honestly. And if that's astrologism, okay, so be it. But I think, you know, I mean, as it is, that astrology is something that literally belongs to everyone. And yet, we, you know, even in the ranks of the well-versed, we have a really broad variety of, perspectives and definitions of what astrology is and how it works, et cetera, which is certainly, something that's not going to change too soon. So who's to say? You know, I mean, that one person's astrology is someone else's astrologism, I guess. You know, vive la différence.
Sure. Well, I think at the very least we can say there's a general consensus that astrologist is not the preferred term, and there's a little bit of a negative view or connotation with it for most astrologers. You might be able to rehabilitate it because it kind of rhymes with enthusiast and apply astrologist to, I guess, amateur astrologers, astrological enthusiasts. But even that, because of the negative connotations, sometimes that astrologers ascribe to astrologist might even cause some problems.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a big deal. If someone says, oh, you're an astrologist, right. I usually just presume, okay, this is someone who doesn't know much about the field, and why should they? It's a rather obscure field, you know. In our little microcosm, you know, we might feel like we're above the word, but really, you know, amongst the hoi polloi, it's no sin, you know, and it's not, it's generally not something that you know, it's not a term I like that much, but it's not like I feel offended if someone, you know, if and when someone uses it with me. Yeah, like I said, I just presume that, okay, they don't know much and, you know, so what?
Sure. Okay, so if you want to make an astrologer wince, just introduce yourself as an astrologist.
Yes. Yeah.
Slight reaction.
If you have some astrologer friend that is annoying you and you want to get back at them.
Just keep referring to them as an astrologist.
Yeah. Okay. It'll work.
So one of the things that we were just talking about when it came to astrologer versus astrologist is, you know, whether there's belief involved, whether astrology is some sort of ism, like astrologism, I think is the term that you used. Do you think that astrology involves? I got a little bit of flack in my definition on the Astrology Dictionary the other day for saying, using the term belief and saying that the first piece of criteria was that an astrologer is somebody who quote unquote believes that astrology is a legitimate phenomenon or believes that astrology works. And I got some flack for using the word belief there, but I sort of tried to defend that a little bit. But what do you think about that? Do you think, does astrology involve belief either in a broad or a narrow sense?
Yeah. It's funny for me because, I have this sort of knee jerk, reaction to the word believe. First of all, I think it's important to state one thing. The word believe, as we use it in the English language, has a few definitions, right? Sometimes we use the word believe in terms of I have a conviction about something that I have no means of proving, you know, which I think is the one we all sort of think of and probably is the one that applies most to astrology. There's another sort of definition of the word believe we use, which is it's an indication of our values. You know, I believe in affordable health care to everyone or something like that. Mm-hmm. So the first problem I have with the word believe is you're always wandering into that quagmire. I will say this. When I discovered astrology years ago, I was someone who, up until that point, I had no religious background whatsoever. A very comfortable agnostic. And I would say agnostic as opposed to atheist simply because I didn't even think about the question of whether or not there was a God. I was that sort of removed from the whole thing that, you know, it never even occurred to me to like spend some time to really think about the problem and decide I was an atheist. You know, it was, that's why I would say I was an agnostic. And what triggered, what changed in my outlook when I discovered astrology is it certainly seemed that the universe was a lot more connected and organized and intelligent than I had previously thought, than I had previously assumed. I had a sort of modern view of nature of being everything's very random, you know. Everything, you know, sure, there's a lot of amazing things in nature, you know, from a juicy tomato off the vine to a beautiful orchid or things like that. But these are just, you know, amazing freaks of nature, accidents that, you know, there's no sort of intelligence behind them. Confronted with astrology, I thought, okay, no, the solar system is somehow telling me things about my life, and that's not something I expected to happen. Does that make me a believer? I think the only I use the word conviction. I think I'm so apprehensive about the word believe because it implies that you have a conviction about something that is a matter of faith.
Right.
And I think that's the key thing is my. You know, I don't want to place faith in astrology if it sort of, you know, I want to treat it roughly. I want to challenge it every day. I don't want to have faith in astrology. And incidentally, this is not a threat to astrology. Astrology is perfectly capable of withstanding whatever doubts and challenges little old me can pose to it. I guess the conviction I have about astrology is that this is something that's part of the natural world. It's just something about the natural world that we haven't really figured it out yet. It's always important. I mean, I believe in the scientific method, but that doesn't mean I'm going to believe, you know, everything that science is currently telling me about the world because it is a work in progress. There are two kinds of science. There are the things we already know about nature, and there are the things we have not yet figured out. And I would say that's what astrology is. It's something that we're getting some indication about. You know, we know some things, and there certainly is a tradition. There are some indications that people used to know things that we have since forgotten. But, you know, that's what I'm left holding. And anything I do in sort of pursuing my investigation of astrology, I guess, is always with that one sort of thought in mind, is that I'm part of a crew of curious investigators who are, you know, in the process of unearthing this piece of knowledge that can certainly be very useful to humanity down the road, or I mean, at least that's my presumption. That can be a dangerous one that people have made in the past about certain things. You know, that's really it. I have a certain conviction. Maybe I'm just sort of letting myself off the hook too easily. You know, maybe I am a believer, but I certainly don't want to think so.
Well, I mean, the distinction is that if we're defining belief as, you know, aligned with faith, or as, you know, an umbrella term or synonym for faith, then the issue is when people invoke belief, they invoke it, you know, as something you have to take as a matter of faith. Like if there's something in the Bible that says, you know, the world was created in 7 days, and you have to take that as a matter of faith, or what have you.
Right. Or even if it's not doctrine. I mean, let's even just, you know, having faith that, you know, being a good, upstanding, moral human being over the course of one's life is a guarantee of some sort of, you know, future reward in the afterlife.
Right.
You know, something really sort of, you know, beyond dogma, sort of a state of being, a state of executing one's life with this presumption. That sort of laid on you. I don't know where I'm going with this, but yeah, there's.
I can see why astrologers do not like the term belief for that reason, because And it's primarily for this reason. It's because they feel that they've been able to empirically verify and validate astrology and validate that there is a correlation between celestial and earthly events. And by validating it, they feel that it's not correct to simply frame it as a matter of faith.
For the time being, of course, the outside world equates our discoveries to the people who find images of Jesus on toast. But I mean, that's, you know, I would certainly not support that view. But that's what we're wrestling with. This touches on what I was talking about earlier in terms of that, the sort of understandable, but really unnecessary, inferiority complex, held by a good many in the community. And I suppose that, you know, I have to cop to it at certain times by myself too. I would not characterize anything I'm doing as being based on faith, but I think I would sort of have to just silently shrug off any accusation from outside that, you know, that's precisely what I am engaged in.
Sure. And it's the empirical aspect, I guess, of astrology that leads astrologers to say it's not a matter of belief. I guess the point where I guess you could make the argument for some level of belief is that the person has developed a belief that there is a correlation between celestial and earthly events because they have perceived or they feel that they've been able to validate that empirically in their own lives.
Yeah.
Whereas they're not just reading it from a book that, you know, Mercury Mars transits coincide with arguments, and they just take that for granted. Like, they go out and they check and they have experiences and they observe and see if that's true. And if it is true, they feel that it's been validated. And if it, you know, happens and then they don't see any correlation, then they say, no, that's bogus.
Yeah. To play ha 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 devil's advocate, I think to an outside thinker, our making that kind of claim is going to sound similar to someone who's absolutely certain that God has been speaking to them directly in their thoughts and telling them to go and commit either great or heinous deeds. In other words, you know, we have to have work that validates astrology, not just for ourselves personally, which I can certainly attest. I mean, I'm sure anyone listening, and I can attest, it can be very meaningful discoveries on a personal level. But we have to be able to show astrology to the world in order for it to not be thought of as a matter of faith. I do think this is possible. I mean, frankly, I got to tell you, it's come to the point, Chris, where I hope that that this is all wrong. I hope there's a part of me that hopes that the skeptics are right, that we're all deluded, that we're just making this up, that it's just in our heads, that it's just, you know, a sort of a nutty belief system. Because with the kind of work that I've uncovered, if this is all part of my imagination, that would only mean that I've got an incredible imagination, and that would be even more pleasing, more gratifying, and even, you know, I come from a place that offers very lucrative art grants. It could even be more lucrative if this is all a sort of a faith belief thing for me, as opposed to what I think I'm doing, which is a serious sort of empirical study of a natural phenomenon. So I'm kind of, you know, I've positioned myself in a win-win situation where, you know, even if, you know, the big if we're all deluded, if they're right, if this is just a lot of nonsense that we're all engaged in. And I'm really not just speaking for myself. I mean, I do feel about what I'm doing specifically, but what we're all doing, you know, if this is a mass delusion, it's even more amazing than the sort of the more ho-hum mundane thought that, no, this is just, you know, we're just like any other department of knowledge where we're just sort of, you know, slowly, gradually discovering something about a part of nature. You know, we're just like the people studying the bumblebees or the weather patterns or anything like that. You know, That's sort of at the end of the day, it's the grim reality, you know. Whereas the thought that we're like sort of this community of connected creative artists who are collectively sort of putting together this amazing outlandish claim about our solar system and how it reflects life on Earth. That's, you know, that's something even more amazing to me than you know what I actually think astrology is. And I think that's really the way I would encourage, not that I never want to tell other people how to see astrology for themselves, but if they are sort of you know, overcome sometimes with these defensive feelings about what we do and what people may say about what we do, you know, comfort yourself that, hey, you know what, if your critics are right, then you're even more amazing than if they're wrong, which, you know, I will still say that they are. So, you know, it's really, I don't know, maybe I've made it convenient for myself, but why not?
Sure.
Why not?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the issue of belief definitely comes up when it comes to the issue of scientific validation and the current status of astrology when it comes to science, in so much as it has not really done a very good job of validating itself, especially statistically through statistical studies, as well as other types of studies. And as a result of that, because science, or at least scientific studies and the scientific method is currently used as this sort of litmus test for determining what is real and what is not real, and what is actually happening in reality, but in contemporary society, that astrology's lack of that does put astrologers in a weird place where,
right,
you know, you have to say, how can you, somebody could legitimately, like a scientist could legitimately pose the question, like, because astrology has not been validated scientifically, how can you still believe that there's anything to it? And that would be a valid question.
Yeah.
At which point the person's personal experience, of course, is still invoked, which one could easily try and say that that's not valid, that your personal experience must be wrong.
Sure.
But the astrologer's defense is that it could go either way. It's not necessarily true that all astrologers are just suffering from some sort of mass delusion when they notice or when they see patterns or correlations between celestial and earthly events. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of my problems with the current state of scientific research in astrology is, the lack of standardization in the field has led it so that the tests seem to be all over the place about who's conducting them and what methods they're using and, you know, what the state of the knowledge was of the astrologers who were participating in them. And I wonder, I mean, that's still a question. I've recently been rereading some of the books that kind of try and wrestle with this question of the status of astrology with respect to science and how some astrologers answer that question. But that might be too far of a digression. That might be for another show.
It might be for another show. Although I think that, you know, that The thing about science, the thing to remember is, again, this sort of the inferiority complex that we have regarding that question. The world of science within itself is really cutthroat. You know, even the serious, you know, the biologists and meteorologists and geologists have gotten into massive fights and careers ruined and people's, you know, lifelong work trashed. And over time, the reason I guess I believe in the method is it is self-correcting. At some point, the truth surfaces. I think the thing is that it takes time. There is work that we might be doing now that, you know, might not be acknowledged while we're still here, but then 70 years from now, someone writes a paper and says, you know, actually these people were really onto something, and, you know, alas, they died eating dog food because no one believed them, but so it goes. You know, that might be the thing, but at the end of the day, the system does work. That's why I would love to live to see some kind of vindication for astrology. But I've realized that it's more important to simply be participating in its eventual vindication rather than sort of feel affronted because I have not personally been as yet party to such an occurrence. Like I said, the only conviction I have about astrology is that it's part of the natural world. And if it's part of the natural world, that means, you know, there's a science to it. And I don't know, maybe there really are some things that human beings can just never, ever, ever figure out. Maybe there are limitations. But so far, you know what, we're doing pretty well in surprising ourselves in terms of the things that we discover about life in the universe. I've seen enough, and this isn't just about my chart, as you know. I'm a very engaged mundane astrologer, and I've compiled a lot of evidence that could have been compiled until, you know, the 21st century, and we had the technology to do it. So I've seen enough that you know, my conviction that there's a science behind this somewhere is pretty strong, and it's the same kind of conviction that a lot of working scientists have had in supporting their work when they still had to defend it. There's no shame in it. You just, you know, we're all victims of history. And so we happen to come into this, you know, this work at a time when it still requires a lot of, cold-blooded, sort of resolute dedication. You know, it's not up to us to be rewarded or feel gratified for having done astrology a service. You know, this is someday the work we're doing is going to be useful to someone. You know, those of us who are really working towards finding out what the heck's going on with this thing, you know.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, definitely the sort of Copernicus mythology or archetype, I guess you want to call that, is definitely a very prominent story in the astrological community, or not story, but like mindset in the astrological community of like, we've discovered this really interesting property of nature and hopefully at some point it'll be vindicated.
Yeah.
I mean, I sometimes question that, but I think ultimately most astrologers hold that position. And it's probably a valid one, because if there is anything to astrology, like if astrology is a valid phenomenon that exists in nature, then it does have some really interesting implications about almost every aspect of our culture and of science and nature and the quality and nature of time and like the properties of time itself. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a lot of things that it brings up.
A lot of stuff, indeed.
So let's transition in the last part of this just to talk about, and to sort of round out the show by talking about what are some basic things that you think that a person should know in order to consider themselves astrologer? Like, what are the basic things that a person should know? Or maybe not, let's say, basic, but like, if a person was to have a well-rounded, broad basis as an astrologer, like, what would that consist of? I mean, one of the things, for example, I would mention right away is simply and I think you would appreciate, is the ability to read and understand an ephemeris and to be very conversant in how to use an ephemeris.
Yeah. Definitely. And also to sort of think in ephemeris terms. I'd say, I mean, this is sort of a personal soapbox of mine, but there is the analogy I would use in this case is the difference between photography and cinema, or, you know, or at least the difference between still images and moving images. A lot of astrologers sort of stop at a still image perspective of when they're looking at an astrology chart. In other words, they're just sort of looking at a given chart in a sort of abstract, frozen in time kind of thing. There's a slight overemphasis on the symbolism behind the planets and a rather large underemphasis on the knowledge that these bodies are all in motion. Mm-hmm. and that it's understanding the nature of their motion, not the nature, but the sort of the bigger picture about their motion, what their cycles are, where they've just come from, where they're going. You know, not just that someone might have Mars at 15 degrees Scorpio, but, you know, when did it last go retrograde? When did it last make a conjunction to Saturn or an opposition to the Sun or what have you? It's really sort of trying to understand an astrological chart in a sort of kinetic context as opposed to a fixed one.
It's funny you mentioned that, because Bruce Schofield a couple of weeks ago, when I tried to define the term birth chart, we were talking about terminology we use and whether or not it should be descriptive. And he said that if the term birth chart was descriptive, we should call it time slice, because that's actually what it is. And that fits what you're talking about perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, leave it to Bruce to say it like it is. That's exactly what it is. It's a time slice. It's, you know, if the history of time, if time was a gigantic sausage, then you're talking about this thin little sliver of salami that you sliced out of the middle of it, you know.
And that's the birth chart, or
that's the birth chart, yeah.
Whatever chart you've cast.
Exactly, whatever chart you've cast. So there's, you know, it's understanding that slice comes from a continuum. And you want to understand what you can about the continuum as much as you want to sort of look at the slice and contemplate it in its own right. You know, and not that that's not valid. I mean, a big part of what we do is taking that one little slice and analyzing it. And certainly, you know, the symbolism I talked about a second ago is a really important part of that. But there's this broader thing. It's understanding the dynamic. Sure. Of these bodies and their history and their future, and by future I mean the, you know, where they seem to be going.
Sure.
How we can plot their course.
Looking at the birth chart not just as a static slice of time, but as a part of a continuum.
Yeah. I'd say that's you know, it's not like that's the most fundamental piece of knowledge that an astrologer should have, but it would be my contention that there's. You know, that is sort of an underemphasized but very crucial element about astrological knowledge that is important to hold on to.
Sure. So familiarity with planetary cycles, how to use an ephemeris, familiarity with retrograde periods, and
if you're familiar with cycles, then you know about the retrograde periods. I'd say that's part of it. And okay. Certainly understanding the cycles, which comes into the retrogrades and the superior conjunctions for the inner planets and all that stuff.
Sure.
The ephemeris and knowing the ephemeris is, you know, part and parcel again with understanding, you know, that this is all coming into one big rule.
Right. Basically,
in other words, yeah.
The ephemeris is the central point.
Yeah, because the ephemeris is the thing that'll teach you about what I'm talking about.
Right. The ephemeris incorporates the planets. It incorporates the zodiac. It incorporates aspects or the doctrine of configurations, and I guess the only one it's missing is the fourth branch, which is the doctrine of houses.
the good old houses.
I guess that's that makes sense, because the houses are tied directly into that time slice, because you can only have the houses once you're
only
looking
in the time slice.
Snapshot in time.
Yeah. So that's and to me the houses come into the, you know, the houses are something that they're a symbolic construction. So it's a next layer of using astrology. It's not the first layer, which is just sort of knowing that the planets and what they're doing outside of a given horoscope. So that, you know, and I'm trying to address what I consider an underemphasis, not to sort of belittle something that I think is overemphasized, but just to sort of point out that's only, you know, one part of knowledge that's being pursued at the expense of another.
Sure.
You know, anyone who gets into astrology, you know, looks at a chart and learns about trines and learns about the elements and the modes and, you know, all that basic stuff. I mean, that's what we all learn. And so, you know, while I would say that's all really necessary knowledge, I don't feel compelled in any way to sort of encourage, like, yeah, you know, make sure you learn that there are fire, earth, air, and water signs, because, you know, that's gonna happen.
Right.
So that's why I'm sort of emphasizing this other part of what I would consider really basic astrological knowledge that maybe isn't treated like it's basic or you know, isn't regarded as such.
Okay. So basic is know your fourfold system of planets, signs, houses, and aspects. Ideally speaking, an astrologer, let's say, talk about the idealist. The ideal astrologer for me has like this broad depth of understanding in a number of different fields that crosses history, philosophy, sociology, yes, politics,
because etymology.
Right.
You know, because there is that there's a strong indication, and you probably know more about this than I do, but what always fascinated me about the ancient material is the idea that the terminology comes directly, you know, very consciously from a language that you know, had a meaning of its own, that every word sort of it derives from, you know, a language that was actually sort of spoken by the people who were putting the whole thing together. So I think that's, you know, that's an amazing part of the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think that's an opinion that you always had that I thought was interesting, that the best astrologer is actually somebody who's not terribly well-versed in astrology, but who's like an expert in some other field, like biographies or history, yeah, or what have you?
Yeah, yeah, because astrology, you know, touches... astrology is about life. It's about human life. Well, it's probably even about things that are beyond human life. But at least, you know, let's think small here and just think humanity at large. And when it comes to humanity at large, then yeah, astrology is something that's going to talk about our collective history. And therefore, you know, you can be a music enthusiast or a history of science enthusiast or a political enthusiast. And all of these subjects offer enormous potential to discover astrology. I think that the thing that I've said to you and a number of people before is I point to my bookshelf full of biographies and history books, and I say, these are all astrology books. Every single newspaper you read can be an astrology book. Every TV broadcast offers some kind of astrological lesson. You know, this, and it really is. You know, it's not going too far to say so. It's something that we can see in every sort of facet of life, and to sort of know to restrict astrology to a very sort of to any sort of very insular perspective, I think, is doing it a great injustice.
Right, because essentially the point is that every story has something to teach you if you pay attention to the astrology of it, that every unique situation, if you cast a chart for that, or if you pay attention to what the transits were that coincided with it, then you can learn something new about astrology.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I think that brings us to about the end of this show. So that actually transitions into what you're doing right now is you're trying to finish a book where you basically summarize a huge research project you've been doing on the planet Uranus, right?
Yeah, I'm preparing to really launch my publishing career fully and earnestly. Even though I as you know, I'm an astrologer who's really very focused on the visible planets, especially Venus and Mars. But I'm doing my first book on Uranus, mainly, really, the book is about Uranus. Uranus is sort of the protagonist of the book, but the book is really about the tropical zodiac. Mm-hmm. And Uranus is just the means I'm using to broach the subject of the tropical zodiac and what I think it is, or what I think I can demonstrate it is in the context of astrology. So it's interesting in that way. I'm planning these two series of books. One series of books about the outer planets. In other words, I plan eventually on doing a What's Up Neptune and a What's Up Pluto after this one, What's Up Uranus.
I don't think those will have the same, the titles will have the same ring to it.
Well, it's part of a series, and I like it. It's I'm invoking Bugs Bunny.
Sure.
A great American. And the Outer Planet books are sort of one series, and then the Visible Planet books will be another series. And there are two sets of challenges. The Outer Planet books are really a challenge to the astrological community, because the Uranus book, just like the other books will be, the Uranus book is basically a compilation of short stories about the lives of somewhere between 200 and 300. I haven't totally finished editing the book, but it can be as many as 300 famous people and what their Uranus transits were like. I'm looking at Uranus conjunction or oppositions to the sun or moon. And basically it's a challenge to the astrological world because we are used, while I do feel modern astrologers are pretty adept at using the outer planets, they're a little too attached to the keywords. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you suddenly, if you're confronted with 300 samples of Uranus transits in one shot, you sort of realize that a list of 12 or 20 keywords isn't really going to get you where you need to go in terms of understanding what's going on with that body. So that's that book. And then the books about the visible planets, certainly the ones about Venus and Mars, are going to be my challenges to the skeptic community. Because they really, it's a bit creepy that the amount of detail you can put into talking about these cycles and how much history you can put in there. Sure. And it starts to become overwhelming.
And you're primarily dealing with recurrence transits of the eight-year period of Venus and the 15-year period of Mars?
Yeah, exactly.
What you're demonstrating is that in individual biographies that there's some people that are really tied into those cycles and that those repetitions show repetitions in events or connections in their life every 8 or 15 years?
Exactly. There's that part to it, and then there's also the national histories, because I can also sort of, you know, I use the Venus cycle, for instance, to talk about the history of the Second World War, or I can even use Venus cycles to talk about the history of the British monarchy, or you know, even Russian history in a really broad sense, going from the Tsarist era to the Soviet era to the modern Republic era. So there's a lot of there's sort of political and geopolitical stories that I'm putting into those books that I think make, you know, so at least one of the most compelling arguments for the validity of astrology that I can think of.
Sure.
I mean, it's easy for me to say I'm the guy doing the work, but it definitely is a new kind of gauntlet to throw down. So I look forward to getting on with those. But I felt I should start with the Uranus one because it introduces the central character. The big thing that the tropical zodiac, the thing that they keep, just like they did, you remember, about a year and a half ago, they tried to hit us with it again. The big story that they've discovered a 13 sign and stuff that keeps surfacing every few years, but people keep forgetting. So I wanted to put out something that would sort of address that and get anyone who's going to sort of read future books I write an idea of what I'm doing with that basic frame, the tropical zodiac.
Yeah, and I think that is actually, I don't think that's just subjective on your part, but that probably is the best way to objectively demonstrate that there's something going on with astrology, is through timing of events, through specific cycles that have fixed periods and very fixed repetitions. Because that's in a completely different league than some sort of symbolic interpretation of when, you know, this planet Mars is on the descendant because it represents strife, that it indicates strife in a person's relationships. Like that's a much different level than what you're doing, where you're showing the most important events in a person's life happening every 8 years in accordance with a specific planetary cycle or what have you.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it really is the volume of material that contributes to this being considered significant. I mean, you know, the thing that we'll always hear from skeptics is, where's the evidence? Well, you know, before you have evidence, you need you need, well, before, actually, they'll say, where's the proof or where's the evidence? Well, before you have proof, you need evidence. Before you have evidence, you need to have, you know, a lot of observations. You need, you need to have sort of the legwork put in. And that's what I'm offering here is a tremendous amount of data that at least, you know, raises the question, what's going on here? Just how random can this be? It's difficult to explain without sort of going through all the examples, but sure. Then that's what the book's going to be for. But yeah, I look forward to getting through, you know, getting on with that as soon as this Uranus one is done, which should be very soon.
Yeah, and I think we'll come back and discuss some of this in a separate show at some point in the future.
Terrific.
In the meantime, it looks like you're speaking at the SOTA conference later this year.
Yes, October. I forget what the exact date. What is it, October 10th or October 7th? Terrible of me to not be prepared, but look it up. It's the State of the Art Conference happening in Niagara Falls, New York. Certainly, it's going to be in October of 2012. Certainly, I am scheduled to be there and give a talk on Uranus transits, and I hope to see you there. And I'm also, I've got other plans, but we'll talk about that on another show, I guess.
Sure. It looks like the State of the Arts or the SOTA conference is October 18th through the 21st in Niagara Falls, New York. Yeah, so I hope some people will be able to visit you there. So I guess that's it for this show. So thanks for coming on to talk to me about what the definition of the term astrologer is. And yeah, I think we'll definitely do this again sometime, and hopefully you'll be back to co-host future shows.
Anytime, Chris. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's it for this episode of the Astrology Podcast. So if you enjoyed the show, then please subscribe to us either on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or you can subscribe via iTunes, or we even have an email subscription form so that you can sign up to receive an email each time new shows are posted. If you enjoyed the show, then definitely please go to iTunes and give us a good rating. And yeah, I think that's it for this episode. So thanks for listening, and I hope to see you again next time.